Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Hello, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I'm your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me on this episode. My guest is going to be Sam Adonis. We talk about his brother, Corey Graves, Lucha Libre being the most hated man in Mexico, and much, much more. That interview is coming up very, very soon. Guys, I mentioned this last episode, but Christmas is fast approaching, so be sure to buy the wrestling fan on your shopping list a Wrestling Nostalgia t-shirt. I have several designs to choose from, so there is something for everyone. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty and finish your gift shopping today. All right, let's get right to it. Let's take a break. And when we come back, I'll have my guest, Sam Adonis. Hillsinger Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over 3 decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilsingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is Philsinger Games, PhilsingerGames.com to order now. This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend Ike, and we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. All right, welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Sam Adonis. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing great, my friend. Thank you for having me this morning or afternoon or whatever time of the day someone's listening to this.
Yeah. It is. As many casual fans, they might not know, you have a lot of family ties to wrestling. Your father, Dan Plinsky, promoted shows in the Pittsburgh area, right?
Exactly. I always like to refer to myself as the most experienced wrestler you've never heard of. I've never been the cool, guy or the indie flavor of the month, but I've been around everywhere. I know everybody. I've seen some things, and it's funny because usually when somebody does, find out who I am, they're usually fascinated because how have I not heard of this guy? So
yeah,
I guess you could say I'm either a well-kept secret or I'm not doing enough to get my name out
there. Well, yeah, whatever. But in Pittsburgh, obviously, it's obviously most known for Bruno Sammartino, that area. Yep.
And, so my dad would almost be considered one of the most foremost experts on Bruno Sammartino. Cause it's funny growing up in our house, you know, as some people might know, Corey Graves is my older brother from WWE.
Yeah.
But in our household, you know, we hear stories about Bruno since we were babies. You know, we had all the old magazines. We always would have his whatever footage was available. It seemed like in our household, it was almost like this mythical god, you know, in the Bruno days, we would hear these stories. And, you know, it was literally like a central topic of wrestling in our house. So my dad to this day is you know, the biggest Bruno fan you ever meet. In fact, he's teaming up with Daryl Sammartino, who's Bruno's son. And on March 15th, we're doing the official Bruno Sammartino Memorial event, a fundraiser for the Pittsburgh Food Bank. So it's kind of surreal after all these years being able to actually, you know, associate with the family and you know, increase our reputation enough to be trusted by the Sammartino just to be putting on events of this caliber.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can relate. I grew up in Indiana, and in Indiana, everybody knew Dick the Bruiser, right? And everybody had a Dick the Bruiser story. Even guys, you know, even people that weren't wrestling fans, right, knew who Dick the Bruiser was and had some story about Dick the Bruiser. Even my dad hated wrestling, hated pro wrestling, but my dad was a police officer. And he had a Dick the Bruiser story that one time coming through, you know, we were from Columbus, Indiana. He pulled Dick over for speeding.
Well, it's funny because we hear a lot of in Pittsburgh, our local TV show was called Studio Wrestling, and it ran on WIIC and Channel 11. And in that time, I mean, Crusher and Bruiser were both huge stars in the Pittsburgh territory. So I remember seeing some of the only available footage from the Pittsburgh territory is a lot of old Bruiser and Crusher interviews. Those are some of the only ones that like survived. So there'd be days to this day, if I'm home with my dad, sometimes he wants to just put on some old 60s wrestling on the couch. And, you know, I'm one of the only guys my generation that can actually say I've seen a lot of it.
Yeah. 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 Bruiser and Sammartino were, I would consider them friends, right? Because Bruno also came to Indianapolis and did a run for a short bit with Bruiser. And it was tag champs with Bruiser and stuff. So they must have been pretty close and trusted each other and liked each other. They were appearing.
I always say there's so much we could learn now from the independents, you know, because in a sense, prior to the media explosion, you know, the territory systems were virtually independent wrestling. The only difference is they had a business infrastructure and they had, you know, that mafia-esque rule system where people worked together and elevated each other. I think there's so much that, you know, independent wrestling and specifically my generation could learn from looking back at the past, and not even just the matches, but the infrastructure of the business. You know, each town and city across the country should have a big, strong local babyface star. We should be working for each other, helping elevate each other. But, you know, sadly, wrestling has become such a online driven industry and everybody's just in a rat race to get the most followers, and it doesn't necessarily work that way anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Even independent wrestling anymore is more national, right? I mean, guys are traveling all over and appearing all over. It's like, no matter where you go, you're almost seeing the same cards anywhere. And it's, you know, it's lost that flavor, right? That regional flavor.
Yeah. And in my opinion, one thing that hurts it is, you know, I think when you're appealing to that kind of online fan base, you kind of, nobody's really interested in creating a baby face that's actually, you know, for the masses, for the people, a likable person. You know, I think a lot of people judged wrestling based on the coolest tricks. And that's kind of, you know, the exact opposite of the essence of pro wrestling. You know, you need a baby face to connect with the audience. And these guys that you see on every given indie show or even on the, you know, higher level independent TV shows, they essentially have no character or charisma. They don't know how to connect with an audience, and they might look great if you're watching them on a video, but when you see them live, you know, something's not quite there. And I think that's something, you know, my generation needs to put a little bit more effort into, is learning how to communicate and connect with an audience.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, wrestling at its very core has always been good versus evil. And it's definitely a lot. There's too much gray now, right? If you're a bad guy, too many bad, you know, quote unquote bad guys or heels, just trying to be cool.
Exactly.
Then, and it's they don't care about getting heat or being hated. They just want to be, you know, the cool bad guy that still sells t-shirts.
So and honestly, right now, you know, I've been in Mexico for 7 years. Right now, I've been with AAA. Mm-hmm. I was with CMLL before, and I have been dying to be a babyface for the last 2 years. It's just, that's what I want to do. But Conan, who's my booker, is you know, he's adamant that they don't have heels because heels don't want to be heels.
Yeah.
He says, you know, I have job security. I have my position because I'm the only guy that he can count on that will go out there to piss people off, get the baby face over, and come in the back and not worry about getting my spots over online or not worry about selling my t-shirts after the event. You know, which is cool. I take a amount of pride in that because, you know, there's not many guys, not many heels left like me. But at the same time, you know, I would like to be a baby face and try something new.
And well, as you mentioned earlier, right, Corey Graves is your older brother, and he also did he trade you, correct?
Yes, sir. It would have been 2005, I believe.
Yeah, and you guys, like when you debuted, often early in your career, you teamed with him. That had to be kind of a lot of fun for you two with your dad promoting shows and everything else to kind of get that little time of teaming with each other and everything else. That had to be special.
Oh, it was great. And growing up, he and I were kind of inseparable. I was almost like his little sidekick because before I even wrestled, he was really, you know, reaching almost a national level independent exposure as, you know, Sterling James Keenan all over the country and across the world. I would go to almost every road trip with him possible, you know, whether it's Ring of Honor or 3PW at the ECW Arena. I would travel all over with him. So at the age of, you know, 13, 14, I knew most of the biggest stars now, you know, Samoa Joe, CM Punk, guys like Christopher Daniels, Chris Hero, AJ Styles. They all knew me as you know, Graves' younger brother. And it's funny because I was almost like the cocky little kid that, you know, talked a little bit too much. But at the end of the day, you know, especially now, everyone kind of always knew I knew my stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know how to keep my mouth shut, but at the same time, they all knew I loved it more than everybody, and I had seen and studied it more than most of them anyway. So now it's no surprise looking back. They said, well, it kind of makes sense that he have the career he has because I did. I've just been a different level of obsessed my whole life.
Yeah, I was saying, hadn't changed much, has it? You're still kind of that same kind of guy, right?
Well, you know, I always use the analogy that I feel like, you know, if you're going to have brain surgery and you're going to have a doctor operate on your brain, you'd like to think that the doctor would know the anatomy of the foot too, right? You know, so as far as having a profession, if you want to be an expert, if you want to be the best at something, you need to know every asset and every facet of your profession. So, you know, even though I'm 6'4", 240 pounds, and I work in Mexico, I still very much enjoy watching and learning, you know, Memphis wrestling or some sort of 1960s Dumont Network, Chicago wrestling, just because there's something you can always learn. And you really do never stop learning.
Yeah. I mean, another aspect, I think it's lost with, you know, current wrestling, right? So many of these guys were just raised on, you know, Attitude Era or whatever. That's all they know, or primarily what they know. And they're missing, right? They're pulling two or three generations into what this stuff is and not looking back to where these guys got their influence.
Right.
And what they're pulling from. So it's derivative, right? It doesn't come across the same.
And I think a lot of people have, you know, misinterpreted, you know, that there's the house show wrestling and the live entertainment wrestling has almost kind of taken a back seat. We've kind of merged into this hybrid, you know, I call it the indie style. But, you know, the essence of wrestling being a live event and being, you know, a live action vaudevillian style performance art is kind of being lost, you know, and unless you study and understand what your job is on any given night, you're going to make the same bad mistakes that everyone else does. And that's why, you know, if you grow up watching the Attitude Era and, you know, you see it when you see so many people through no fault of their own, they're imitating what they've seen on TV instead of understanding what their job is in the first place, which is to entertain. And I can see, you know, two guys that might have really good reputations for being some of the best, you know, indie guys out there in front of a show. Let's say it's a AAA house show or a TV show, and these guys have reputations on the American indies. But if 6,000 people in Mexico City have no idea who they are, they're at a disadvantage because they don't know how to light that crowd up. And I think that's something that's, you know, kind of helped me throughout my entire career is I've always gone into it thinking, you know, whether everyone knows me or does not know me, my logic is, okay, nobody in this crowd knows who I am. My job to light them up. It's my job to entertain them. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of differences between modern indie wrestling and, you know, live house show wrestling. There's a disconnect that we have to, you know, try to help all wrestlers understand a little bit better.
Sure. Yeah. Well, in 2011, you were under a WWE developmental deal. And the only reason I want to touch on this, because it led to something that's really important kind of in your career, is you met and became friends with William Regal. And, correct. And among other things, at that time, he helped get you booked in England, which was kind of a pivotal point in your career.
Yes. Working in All-Star Wrestling, this is Brian Dixon's company, which is, you know, if you look back at their lineage, he literally promoted Giant Haystacks, Fitz Finlay, Regal, Rookside. Everybody that's ever been anything that's come out of the UK has come through Brian Dixon's All-Star Wrestling.
Yep.
And at the time, you know, I always tell people that I was there for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years of a wrestling territory, because yeah. There was nowhere else on earth where you could wrestle, you know, 150 shows a year and yep. not be seen on the internet, not be worrying about TV. You literally are going town to town, and, you know, body preservation was our main priority. Yep. So, you know, whether I did all the coolest, the high spots and dangerous athletic things I wanted, you know, there's only so much your body can take if you were to do that every night. So that's yeah. where I really honed my craft as a professional and learned how to get away with the less is more storytelling and being able to perform without hurting myself, without hurting my opponent. And that experience really set the stage for the rest of my career, because 4 years working there turned me almost into a polished product. And yeah. since then, anywhere I've been, I've walked in the front door almost as a, you know, I hate to use the word veteran because it's only 4 years. But if you look at, you know, 4 years wrestling 150 matches a year compared to 4 years on the American Indies, you know, that might as well be the same of 8 or 10 years on the American Indies.
Yeah.
So I walked in the front door of CMLL and, you know, got a job as a top heel. I was brought in as a top heel in AAA. The first time I went to Japan, Ultimo Dragon brought me over because he needed a top heel to work. So, you know, that yeah. short stint in All-Star was invaluable in my career and really provided the season I needed to be who I am.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a whole nother crucial aspect of wrestling that's lost, is that repetition, right? Where you learn how to, hey, if you're in front of a small house show, a smaller crowd, you don't have to go throw everything at them, right? You can a little less, save the big stuff for the big money shows. And now it seems like it's just, no matter if you're working in front of 5 or 500 or 5,000, everybody's doing everything and throwing, you know, doing it all. They're not learning, like you said, body preservation. And not knowing how to,
the number one example of that, in my opinion, of how, you know, it is beneficial. You can look at the punch in professional wrestling. Mm-hmm. You know, for years, punches have been the most effective and, in my opinion, the most beautiful point of our art form.
Yep.
Because if you can have Jerry Lawler against Bill Dundee throw an absolute haymakers that looks like these guys are just destroying each other's face, but they're barely touching each other.
Yep.
That to me is pro wrestling in a nutshell. It is the art of deception. Make people yep. believe you're killing each other without actually killing each other.
Yep.
Punches are not easy to learn. Punches, you know, take forever to get good at. And, you know, most wrestling schools will tell you, oh, hey, practice in front of a brick wall. And some guys, I would say the smallest percentile, maybe less than 5% of wrestlers actually practice against a brick wall. And even after you practice against a brick wall, you still need years of practice in the ring to get a, you know, Jake Roberts-esque punch.
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, that repetition has helped me with, you know, having a good punch. And it's something that I realize now by comparing, you know, if you turn on any given top independent company, there's so few people that even throw a punch, let alone yeah. a good punch. You know, the yeah. forearm has generally has replaced the punch. Yep. Because it's almost an acknowledgement that most wrestlers have not had the seasoning and the experience to get to the level of being a good professional. And it's almost not their fault, but it, you know, in my opinion, it's almost a proof of a broken infrastructure, you know?
Yeah.
If you're not wrestling enough to get good enough to learn how to throw punches and deceive the fans and to believe it's real, maybe you're not quote unquote a professional wrestler.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And while you were in England, is that's also where you began using the Sam Adonis name, correct?
Yeah, that was something that actually I had no say in, and I really didn't even care. My real name is Samuel Elias Polinsky. And for years, I wrestled as Sam Elias when I wasn't in WWE. And my boss said, Brian said, what's your name? Sam Elias. Oh, no, you're Sam Adonis now, because he had a wrestler in the 90s named Steve Adonis. Mm-hmm. And the rest is history. I started getting more bookings, better known as Sam Adonis than I was Sam Elias. So I just ran with it. And then when I went to Mexico, they asked me what my name was, and I figured I had the reputation following. So what's the point of changing it?
Yeah. Well, right. Yeah. And like you said, you went around 2016, you went to Mexico and with CMLL, which is obviously right. Legendary. I mean, the longest running active promotion in wrestling. And, but I'm curious, I'm always curious with guys, you know, that are used to America or from America, how hard is it just from day-to-day life to make that move to living and working primarily in Mexico?
The day-to-day life part was, you know, the cultural side of it. I think given I was only, you know, 25 years old at the time and I was a single guy, I loved it. You know, I loved the challenge of it and just, you know, embracing a new culture. I think being, you know, having a family and everything would make it a completely different experience.
Yeah.
But I was open-eyed to everything. And for whatever reason, I don't know what the hell happened, but I ended up managing to learn a lot of Spanish very fast. So I was, you know, partially fluent within about, you know, 4 to 5 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, that only helped my cause, and being able to communicate really, you know, added to my appeal with the promoters and with the crowd. The hardest part was the actual training in Arena Mexico, because I don't think a lot of fans in America realize how difficult it is to be a CMLL wrestler, you know, and I say this now, you know, even with AAA, I'm regarded as one of the top heels of the company, and they have a history of using a ton of Americans. Mm-hmm. AAA does not see me, and they do not value me as an American wrestler. They value me because I was a CMLL wrestler.
Yeah.
And that's because their training in the Mexican style is so insanely hard. And I would challenge any professional sports, any professional athlete from any walk of life to try a day of CMLL training, and their mind would be blown because it's so insanely difficult. It's more difficult than the NFL or Major League Soccer or anything like that as far as the day-to-day conditioning and drills. I had to compete in all this and do it to get my spot. Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of – it's frustrating sometimes because, you know, you have to hear the internet talk about, oh, he doesn't do any high spots. Oh, there's Mexicans that deserve the spot better than me. You know, it's not that I can't do them. It's that I knew my position was to not do them. Yep. And when it comes down to the actual push I got and, you know, succeeding in CMLL, that all came down to the fact that I was a, you know, bit of a wrestling historian. I was able to realize that being a Memphis heel still works. And sure. In an area where all the heels, the only difference between a heel and a babyface in Mexico was the color of their gear. You know, the heels wear black, baby faces wear colors. And they all do the same thing. They work the same crowd, work the same style. So when I come in as an American punch kick guy, waving a flag, doing a Fargo strut, I knew that I had these fans in the palm of my hand. And the success kind of spoke for itself. So, you know, the differences, there were plenty of differences. There was plenty of hardship. And you know, it was not easy to get what I got. But at the end of the day, knowing the wrestling business is what helped me get what I got.
Yeah, because you know, after a while, right, you became a character. And yeah, I'm not diving, you know, into politics or anything else, but you portrayed a very right-wing type individual, right? You were playing off the political climate at the time. And it was really at its core just a modern take on that quote unquote foreign heel that it always
exactly.
was in wrestling.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's kind of what I tell people, you know, it's at the time I was coming out with a flag with Donald Trump's face on it. And this is 2016 when he was at his most hated.
Yeah.
But, you know, I had CNN, Vice, Reuters, NBC, every American media outlet you can imagine coming to Mexico to interview me because, you know, it was almost scandalous. Like, oh, how could somebody be a race baiting, you know, racist in Mexico? And at the end of the day, you know, when I sat down with all of them and said, look, guys, this is professional wrestling 101. You know, I'm looking stupid. I make myself look like an ass and get beat up so I can send 16,000 people home happy. You know, this isn't race baiting. This is the Iron Sheik and Hulk Hogan from 1984, you know? And everybody kind of got a kick out of it and said, wow, you know, we never thought of it that way. So, you know, it was, I think what it was is I had the guts to do it. Yeah. I realized, you know, especially now when every wrestler wants to be the cool wrestler and wants to be the guy selling the t-shirts and everybody wants to be the Rock, there's such a lack of actual heels that want to be hated. And that could almost be the secret of my success for the last, you know, 8 years, because I know that if I'm the best heel, then the best baby faces are going to want to work with me.
Sure.
And every baby face in Mexico, you know, top guys, whether it be Atlantis and Negro Casas or Psycho Clown and La Parca, they're going to say, I want to work with Sam. So now, just by doing my damn job, I'm in the main event of every show I'm at, and I'm more known than if I were to be that guy trying to get attention.
Yeah.
And it's almost an oxymoron, you know, all you have to do is do your job and you get famous.
Yeah. And that, I mean, and that's what fans want to see, right? Again, at its core, wrestling is good versus evil. And, you know, you were playing again, everybody talks about, and I don't take this the wrong way, but everybody talks about how, I don't know how different it was what you were doing, but it's not. It is really just a forgotten art of wrestling that has been there since day one. That's always been there. You just did it and you put it in the modern context and utilized, you know, what that would look like in modern times. And it works.
Exactly. And I think what it is I think, you know, we hear in wrestling all the time, everybody claims they love the business. And I call bullshit on that. I think the very smallest percent of wrestlers love the business. I think most wrestlers love the attention the business brings them, and it gives them some sort of self-worth and validity. But to truly love the business, you have to understand the business. You have to deep dive and pay attention to where it came from and why it got there and what your role really is. And I think it's evident now more than ever that very few people love it. And, you know, I always say I'm one of the few that truly loves the business, because I always put the business ahead of myself, and I always do my best to make sure that, you know, it stays above board and keeps its credibility. And if that means that I'm going to make myself look like a stupid ass and get my butt kicked, you know, for the sake of the business, I will. And I think, you know, when you understand business and you pay attention and look back and realize what a heel's job is and realize, you know, how there's ways to get famous and ways to respect the business instead of just being selfish, you know, I think I'm a testament to how that works. Granted, you know, I like I said, I've never been the hottest, coolest guy on the internet. And maybe that's, you know, what I'm missing out on. And maybe that's something I should have tried to do long ago. But I feel like at the end of the day, anybody can get clout. Very few people can gain respect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think I'm one of the few guys, you know, under 40 years old that can say I'm universally respected for the career I've had, you know, because you can't dispute it at this point, you know, being a top guy all around the world, except for the American Indies, you know, what would you rather be, a AAA CML All Japan main eventer? Would you rather be the top guy in some, you know, indie company that has a live stream once a month?
Exactly. Right. People can say what they want, but yeah, you're not. And again, I'm not besmirching anybody, but you're not that guy that's driving hours upon hours for, you know, the quote unquote hot dog and a handshake and whatever it is. I mean, people don't, you know, maybe they don't grasp like CMLL and AAA, you know, those are major companies. They're not, you know, independents or Mexican independents. These are top level countries that you're working for. And not only that, but you're in demand, right? They want you to work for them.
And I think that falls back in the line where I said where very few people love the business. Because if people truly love the business, they would look at more than just the soup they're being fed online by internet message boards and what's hot on Twitter. If you really love the business, you would go out to find more of what you like. You'd understand what CMLO is, what AAA is, instead of just following fads. And, you know, I look at, if it were 1996, I would be the Wrestling Observer's number one heavyweight, bar none, because those people that read that newsletter in the 90s loved the business, and they studied, they went deep in, you know, underground and tried to find more, and it wasn't a self-serving, you know, hey, look at me, I'm smart, I know the business. They really wanted to see more because they were interested. Now, so social media has made it about the, you know, people find an identity by wanting to be the best critic, you know. 30 years ago, everybody wanted to be Hogan. Now everyone wants to be Meltzer. And people, you know, they dig deep and they try to have their rating systems and their opinions, but they realize nothing gets clicks other than WWE and AEW. So there's echo chambers of that. Yeah. Whereas if they really loved the business, they would be reviewing AAA matches. They would be looking at All Japan. They would be looking at everything other than the surface level. And those people would say, you know, oh, hey, this guy's, you know, legit. Sam Adonis is a top level performer. But, you know, that's not my cross to bear. I don't lose much sleep over it because I know those on the inside know. I just think it is. It's kind of a proof to me that this whole everybody loves the wrestling business has been bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and for someone who does have such a deep love and appreciation for wrestling and in the history and the business, Mexico's got to be a good fit for you, right? Because they often have that different level of respect and love for Lucha. How much have you enjoyed that side of it, being in a country where it's perceived differently, right? There is more appreciation and love, and it's such an ingrained part of the culture.
It's unbelievable, and I love it because it's the only place where, you know, especially working for AAA, they still want heat. They still want it. It hasn't, I can't even say it hasn't evolved because it has evolved, but they haven't sold out their essence. You know, it still is pro wrestling at its very best. And, you know, the way they see wrestling is the way we would look at, like, you know, bowling or karaoke. It's always there. It's just like, what are we doing tonight? Oh, there's wrestling. Well, let's go. Yeah. You might not watch it on TV. I couldn't tell you the last time I watched bowling on TV, but if somebody wanted to go bowling, I'm going bowling because it's just part of, you know, it's just something to do. And that's kind of where it is. You know, Lucha is that. It's an entertainment form that's always there. Everybody has a Lucha experience. Everybody's seen it on TV, or they might, you know, they've gone to it when they were kids. And that also, you know, I think Americans paint Lucha with the brush that it's a lot of flips and, you know, glitz and glamour. And that's true. There's plenty of, you know, you almost got to look at the high flying as like trapeze artists. Mm-hmm. But Lucha is the circus. They have the lion tamer. They have the elephants. They have certain different, you know, aspects to tie the show together and make it entertaining. It really is something that appeals to everybody. And there's so much more than just these high spots, where some of these guys, that's why a lot of them can go until they're 70 years old, because the vaudevillian live entertainment side of it, you know, the banter and the shtick is so entertaining that you're seeing stuff that, you know, you don't ever see. And that's where you really get to learn the art form. And that's what's helped me even here in America. Something that could be so silly and ridiculous, you know, that most people in the last 30 years have never seen, I could do it on an indie show and it blows their mind and says, oh my God, that was the best finish I've ever seen. And it's a 50-year-old Lucha trick.
Yeah. And with back to you as a heel in Mexico and what you're doing. When I first saw it, when you were doing it, you know, like you said, around 2016, that airtime, it very much reminded me of Los Gringos Locos, Art Barr and Eddie Guerrero. Was there any of that? Did that ever click in your mind? And some of the stuff you saw of Art and Eddie and what they were doing in Mexico that helped inspire your a little bit of what you were doing?
Honestly, the inspirational side has never, I can't say I purposely copied anybody. It's funny because when I was in the UK, Brian Dixon always insisted on the heels coming out with flags. He was all about UK versus the world. So I was, you know, he would blow a gasket if you went to the ring without your flag. So I kind of really embraced the flag, and I understood how to use the flag in the match at the right times, you know, after certain things, when to wave it, how to wave it, how to do a DQ spot or whatever. The flag almost kind of became an extension of me.
Yeah.
I did copy Rick Rude as far as my wrestling gear. I used to get the airbrush tights, and every show I'd have different airbrush. So on a pay-per-view one time, I ended up just, I was the American representative on a pay-per-view. So I got the $100 bill. I got the Statue of Liberty. I got an eagle, and I was thinking what to do. Oh, put Donald Trump. That would be funny.
Yeah.
And that took on a life of its own. And everybody that night reacted in a way to say, oh my God, this is incredible. So a few days later, I ended up asking a friend of mine, says, hey, could you print an American flag with his face on it? He goes, absolutely. And it, you know, it just blew up. So, you know, I didn't steal from Eddie and Art, but I will say that I've drawn so many comparisons, and even CMLL actually wrote it into their storyline. The storyline was that I was Art Barr's biggest fan. growing up.
Yeah.
And that I came after Blue Panther to avenge the loss of the mask for Love Machine.
Yeah.
So when we had our hair versus hair match, that was the major story. All my promos were about Art Barr. And, you know, at that point in time, it was a lot more coincidence than anything. But since then, you know, the comparisons, I've always been drawn to those two. And, you know, one of the biggest compliments I ever got in my career came from Tarantis, which is the referees that wears the suspenders that everybody
uh-huh,
knows.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He said, you know, and this wasn't public. This was just to me one time, and, you know, backstage, he said that I'm the closest thing he's ever seen to Art Barr. He says, uh-huh. You know, Eddie was the steak, you know, he was the in the ring tying this stuff together, but Art was the sizzle, and Art was the guy that lit the crowd up. And he said, you know, since 1994, there has not been anyone in that country that can light the room up like Sam Adonis. And to me, that's one of my, you know, most proud accomplishments, because just being spoken those same sentences as Eddie Guerrero and Art Barr means a whole lot to me as a fan and as a historian. But to think that, you know, anyone else is thinking that tells me that, you know, I'm doing a pretty damn good job.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe that's it, right? It's just maybe not that you're so much directly influenced by them per se, but it's all pulling from the same inspiration, the same concept. And that's why it's relatable. And if anybody, you know, Sam Adonis could always be the answer to the trivia question of what would be the connection between Donald Trump and Cheryl Roberts? Exactly. It'd be Sam Adonis and his airbrush ties.
There you go.
But and you mentioned in 2018, you lost your hair, correct, to Negro Casas.
Negro Casas, yep.
Yeah, and tell us, because people, again, that don't understand Lucha at all, don't know the weight and the impact and the importance of these Luchas de Apuestas matches that they have in Mexico. Tell us, I mean, this is in Arena Mexico, and this was unreal. Tell us what it's like to participate in one of those.
So the best way to equate it would be that a championship match is almost, they're still respected on a level of skill. The championship matches, you don't, I mean, AAA is a little bit different, but as far as CMLL goes, when you see a title match, there's really no cheating. That's really like, okay, we're going to take this match serious. Even the heel is going to wrestle. This is going to be a showcase of talent, you know, and ability. Yeah. Whereas the apuestas are the dramatic matches. They're the ones that have the blood and the vengeance and the anger and the, you know, humiliation. So those ones are always a little bit bigger than the championship match. I was lucky enough to have two of them in CMLL, and I've had one in AAA. But I mean, the second you get to the event that night, you know something's different. The crowd is on a whole different level. The people are so involved. And again, I mean, there's really nothing. There's not much you can compare it to, other than, you know, and I hate to say it because I've never done it, but, you know, a WrestleMania main event. It feels bigger. It feels bigger than a Backlash main event. It feels bigger than the Survivor Series main event. It's the WrestleMania main event.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the apuestas are. It's a little bit above your average main event in a way that it's just anticipation. It's press. It's excitement, you know, and it's a big deal. You know, it's not until you feel the crowd and see it. And even losing one, you know, it's still a more memorable experience in my life than most other in the ring, just because the crowd and the emotion is so much bigger. And just being able to share the ring with guys, you know, whether it be Blue Panther in the first one, Negro Casas in the second one. The third one was with L.A. Park, who's the original La Parca, and Psycho Clown and Rush. So, like, to be in these high-level, high-profile matches, again, you can't really compare it to anything other than the main event of WrestleMania, because in Mexico at that time, it's a time and a place. The whole industry is right there with it. And there's really no, you know, equivalent. So I think if I walked away from Mexico today, I could say I've really, you know, probably reached, you know, high level, not quite legend status yet, but, you know, I've made my mark, and it's whether you like me or hate me, you know, it's in the books. I've been there. Yeah. I've done that.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's kind of in Mexico, it's the ultimate stipulation, right? And it's the best thing about it is it's very protected, right? They only use it when it's personal, when the situation calls for it. So it's impactful still and never overdone.
Usually, you know, in Arena Mexico, there's probably two or three apuestas each year. And the anniversary main event is the biggest of the year. Triple Mania being the other one. The main event of Triple Mania is the WrestleMania main event. And, you know, to be able to say I've done, you know, two of those style matches is incredible. And it almost makes me kind of think, what is there left to do other than be a babyface and have an apuesta?
Yeah. Well, and you talked about, you know, right, you've never been the flavor of the month indie guy or whatever and everything else. But during this run, you magazines were referring to you as the most hated man in Mexico. So that had to be kind of a badge of honor because that's showing, hey, you're doing your job well.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what the measuring stick is for success for anybody that's not in WWE. But I would say, you know, in 2017, I don't know if there was a WWE wrestler that had more non-wrestling press than I did.
Yeah.
You know, and that I had GQ articles. There was Reuters. There was everything. I mean, you could just search Sam Adonis on Google and you're going to find 15 pages of non-wrestling media outlets talking about what I did. So, you know, some people could say that was my 15 minutes and I refuse to see it that way because, you know, life's gotten a lot better since then. But, you know, just to reach that kind of a global audience, you know, if you walked into a Applebee's right now and you asked everybody in the building, have you heard about a guy in Mexico that was wrestling with the Donald Trump flag? You know, there's a portion of them that are going to see it, whether they like wrestling or not. You know, I meet people to this day. I tell them, oh yeah, I saw something like that a few years back. Yeah. You know, it was as mainstream as it gets. And I always think it's kind of funny because, you know, I don't care about what anybody's opinions are anyway. You know, I'd like to think that somebody, some press secretary or somebody in the White House at the time had to have said to the president, you hear about this idiot in Mexico? You know, so someone up top probably heard about it, you know, and that's neither here nor there, but it did make that much of an impact.
Man, would that not be classic if sometime an internal memo shows up talking about Sam Adonis and Mexico?
Exactly. Who knows? I'm probably on some hit list right now. As it
is. Maybe you never know. So what ended up leading to you? Like you said, now you wrestle for AAA. What led to your leaving CMLL?
It was just the time. It was just time to go. I was over Mexico. I was done with my personal life. I was just burnt out. I was 2 years there. I needed to get back to the USA and get some roots underneath me again.
Yeah.
Things slowed down with CMLL. You know, that's a job I could have had for life, but they're very cyclical. They like to try to take care of much of their stars and they kind of rotate them up and down. And I had my main event run, which means I probably wasn't going to be on the same money again for, you know, at least 6 months or a year. So the time was right. And I came back to the USA and I focused a bit more on All Japan, where I was working. I did four tours with them in that period of time. And then once the pandemic happened, out of the blue, I got a phone call from Conan and he said they needed a pay-per-view surprise because they were just coming back to live pay-per-views. And it literally nobody saw it coming. They flew me from Pittsburgh to, I think it was Mexico City. But I showed up unannounced on a pay-per-view and that's really when it set in. The way that they presented me, you know, I was the surprise return in the main event of a pay-per-view. And that's when it all hit me saying, oh shit, I made a splash. You know, this was real. Yeah. It wasn't just, you know, some flash in the pan, small time wrestling career. You know, they treat me like a rock star. I came in as a top guy. And the last 3 years, you know, like I said, I've been everywhere representing AAA. And, you know, like I said, there's not many non-signed wrestlers that really know what it's like to be a top guy and to have to do more press and more travel and more, you know, non-wrestling things than to actually just be good at wrestling. And, you know, to be able to work a program with somebody and actually focus on putting asses in the seats as opposed to having a good match, it's a different level of experience. Yeah. And I think that's something now, it's an asset I have. You know, if I were to sign somewhere in the United States, I don't think I'd be seen as, you know, another young indie guy to fill a role. I'd like to think that, you know, I'd be respected and seen as somebody that knows shit because I've been in the circumstances that they try to teach their entire roster to learn how to do.
Yeah, and talk to us, those that may not be familiar, about some of the differences with CMLL and AAA, right? Because CMLL's more your typically your typical lucha libre, right? And AAA often has a little more American flavor to it, and presentation, whatever else. Is that how it's portrayed in Mexico? And for you guys, you wrestle prominently for both. Is that what you're picking up to?
Definitely, it would be more like looking at WWF against NWA in 88.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, especially even back then there was, I would say now there's more violence, but it would just be the over the top cartoony mass produced version or the sports based reality version. That's definitely the best way to put it, is one's traditional, one is more progressive. But, you know, they're honestly, I say it, and I'm one of the only people that say it, I don't see them as any competition to each other at all. I think the infrastructures are completely different. I don't think everyone in Mexico, you know, they'll tell you about the CMLL versus AAA rivalry. And to me, it's the biggest joke on the planet, because they're not a competition. CMLL owns their own arenas in six different towns. They're never running outside of those towns. They're selling one product. We travel from town to town like the circus, and we have a different TV presentation that's more violence-based and more, you know, over-the-top soap opera-based. To think that there's a rivalry and say one's better than the other is like, you know, comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah, and to me, that stems, again, from a lack of knowledge of wrestling history, because it's not... Now everybody's compares everything, right? And they everything's a competition. But what's missing is that variety, that difference, right? I mean, I remember being a kid and getting to watch four or five different promotions, and each one had their own feel, their own style, their own flavor. And I didn't necessarily love one more than the other. I loved them all for different reasons.
Exactly.
They were all unique.
That to me is kind of the major thing that kind of sucks the credibility out of the Wrestling Observer and its star system. Is every crowd and every promotion on any given night of the week is completely different for reasons that have nothing to do with professional wrestling. Yeah. You know, you have a country, you need to understand the people of the country, what their day-to-day struggles are, what kind of lives they live, and what kind of circumstances they prioritize. So the match that I'm going to have in front of 5,000 Mexicans in some small mining village is going to be completely different than the main event of a, you know, independent wrestling weekend full of fly-ins from all over the country. You know, it's all completely different. And for you to measure them under one rating system and one category of merit is absolutely ludicrous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think even the top journalists know that. But at this point, you know, when you're a company that's making your money based on subscriptions, and, you know, you kind of have to placate to an audience. So, I think it's something that fans and the hysteria and the masses feed into something and want to, you know, say, no, this was better. No, this had 5 stars. No, this was better. I think everybody at the top kind of looks at it, okay, yeah, let them eat cake. Let them fight, you know, let them do what they want to do. It's all just the work to us.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never understood the star rating system, because it's like, oh, there's no, what are you rating? If you want to, and if people want to say, oh, he rates work rate. What is work rate? That's not a definitive term. And that.
Right.
That
work rate, it doesn't mean anything. It's a fictional.
No,
word.
And
at the same time, how are you supposed to rate the performance of two wrestlers, you know, where let's say the entire match was agented this way.
Yeah,
you're not rating the wrestler's performance, because they were both told by two of the top company owners, okay, hey, the whole match, work his leg. He's, you know, you don't have any comeback, any offense till the comeback. So now you're judging this match against the other match that was on an indie show with two amateurs that have complete creative expression in front of 200 people. How is that considered better wrestling than the guys that are getting paid $60,000 for this match and just doing what their boss tells them?
Yeah, your matches aren't supposed to be about the moves you do. It's about supposed to be about the story you tell, and it's lost. I've never understood that. I mean, there's matches that I don't enjoy watching, but if the crowd absolutely goes berserk and reacts, that's a top match. They've done their job.
And it's frustrating to me, not so much, you know, is the way that it is, the fact that, you know, the having a five-star match can affect a wrestler so much, you know, because I know damn well I can have a five-star wrestling match if my goal and me and Psycho Clown said, okay, here's the deal. We need five stars from Dave Meltzer. Let's go do it. Well, AAA's bosses and Conan and Booker's, they might say, what the show was that? What are you guys doing? That wasn't what we wanted. That was everything against it. But, you know, I don't understand how maybe I would be the flavor of the month on the Indies if I had five-star matches. But how can you prioritize making your employer happy and making a journalist happy if you're, you know, trying to just keep your job?
Yep. You mentioned around 2017 that you appeared in All Japan. And I've heard you read some things with you in the past talking about that this was a dream come true moment for you to work for All Japan. Tell us about that.
I was just the biggest Japanese nerd ever as a kid. Same with Mexican. You know, I was just, when I first started tape trading, I was just so fascinated about the culture of you know, foreign wrestling. To think that there is big arenas with cool costumes. And, you know, essentially, it almost felt like a fictional reality. It's like, wait a minute, they have their own version of WWF? You know, and that's kind of what it got for me. That's what I was really interested in. And so I wanted to learn more. And I think just like everybody, I think Japan always kind of has a bit more of a bias in a good way from, you know, the outsiders because of the technology, because of the production. There's, you know, there's certain things that if you ask 100 Americans, would they rather go to Mexico or Japan? 85 of them are going to say Japan. And it's always been that way. I was kind of guilty of the same. You know, I saw it as, you know, for whatever reason, I thought it was better. And again, this comes back to like now being, you know, hindsight being 2020, Japan was prestigious because it paid the most.
Yeah.
That's why everyone wanted to work there. And that's why the quality was so high. Now Japan wrestling, you know, there's so many people wrestling there for free and flying themselves out there.
Yeah.
That it's lost a lot of its valor, but you know, getting there, it took me 10 years. And like I said, I was invited by Ultimo Dragon. So it was still a big deal at the time. I was protected. I was taken care of. It felt great. I loved it. It was the right change of pace. It was completely different. But again, more than anything, it was a place to learn a new crowd, to understand, you know, you can figure out a different audience, what they wanted to see. But at the end of the day, you know, I stayed true to myself and I did what I knew worked. And which is a basically classic American pro wrestling. It works all over the world. You know, I look at Terry Funk as the best to ever do it. And I almost consider myself a Terry Funk in a way that what I do in Mexico is not very different to what I do in Japan. It's not very different to what I do in Texas compared to New York. You know, you're staying true to yourself and learning how to adapt your style to theirs is the art form. And I think, you know, Japan kind of has always been put on a pedestal. Not always for the better, because so many people try to overcomplicate it and make it something it's not.
Yeah.
It was cool going. I'm glad I went. I actually just came back from Japan last month for a different company called Bleep. And I love going to Japan. I love doing what I do. And, you know, culturally it's great. But, you know, when I was younger, I put it on a pedestal, like how somehow it was better than the rest. Now I see wrestling is kind of the same everywhere. And you kind of have to just, you just learn to adapt. And I think it's, and I'm trying to figure out the best way to put this. I don't want to say overrated, but you know, when you know your shtick and you know what work is, you know, you're just doing a job in Japan too. You're just doing a job in Mexico and it's your job to get those fans involved, get them, you know, to want to buy more tickets. And it's not necessarily any better, any, you know, different than what you're trying to do in the United States or in Mexico.
Yeah. I mean, it's like we've mentioned, right? It's no matter how you present the product, no matter what the wrestlers are doing in the ring, if you can boil wrestling down to a few core aspects and it works no matter where.
Exactly.
If you do it right.
Right. And one thing that I've always been able to do is lean into American stereotypes. I think so many people are afraid to wrestlers always want to be cool. And like I said, you're never going to have a job if you try to be cool because everyone's trying to look cool.
Yep.
But when you lean into stereotypes, I think that most of the world sees American pro wrestling and they think WWF. So I do my best to be the most WWF style wrestler I can. And even in All Japan, you know, I can do all the cool Germans and head drops and everything I want to do. I could put kick pads on and kick the shit out of someone like Kawada. But, you know, that's not my job. They wanted to see Kawada, because he's their homegrown guy, beat Dr. Death and beat Terry Gordy and beat these guys. The whole prize betting element of fighters from all over the world are what to make that special. So it was important for the outsiders to remain true to who they are. Yeah. I don't think many people see it that way. They want to go and they try to do an American style, or they try to do Japanese style in America. And everybody has this bullshit hybrid style now where they all do head drops, they all do dives, they all do submissions.
Yeah.
And I think the beauty of wrestling is its differences for each audience. And I think we need to leave that alone. You know, you need to find your style and apply it to other areas instead of taking the styles of other areas and putting it as part of your style.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And obviously you have a very deep knowledge and love of wrestling, the business, you know, and the history. We have a mutual friend in Roy Lucier.
Oh, yes.
Tell me how important are guys like Roy? And Roy is, you know, he's next level on a pedestal of this, but that these historians who are helping to preserve history and video of pro wrestling. I believe you just actually did. I think you just took a trip with Roy to pick up some videos. Is that correct?
I was in town when Roy picked up videos.
Okay. Gotcha.
A few times. So yeah. The thing that, you know, and this goes back to what I said earlier about everybody talks about how they love the business. Oh. Very few people do. Roy loves the business.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've heard the term for 20 years now, the term smart mark. If it were a term, if it were a real thing, which it's not, Roy would be one of them. Because yeah. Roy has never once made it about himself. Roy yep. loves the history. He loves preserving. He loves showing off and teaching what he knows. Yeah. And Roy's the kind of fan that comes to a show and he boos the bad guys and cheers the heel or cheers the baby faces. You know, he plays his role because he knows it. It's not yeah. about him. You know, to think that fans, you know, talk about wanting to be smart fans, but all they want to do is go start chants and sabotage the show and make it about themselves. That's not love for the business, man. That's yep. being yep. selfish. And that's, you know, wanting to get something out of it for yourself. And, you know, I wish there was 100 more Roys. Because, yeah. Oh, yeah. you know, he cares. And that's something that, you know, I don't give my time to too many people that don't care. And sometimes, you know, I could tell by your account, you and I are clearly going to get along because of, you know, your insight. Some people try to talk wrestling with me and, you know, within 5 or 10 minutes, you can tell that they're not really going to connect because yeah. they're caught up on some of their misconceptions. You cannot fake passion. You cannot, you know, you can't bullshit your way through coming off as passionate. Yeah. And this is something that's helped me in my career, being able to talk with guys like Conan and Brian Dixon and William Regal. When you bring up certain obscurities, people are going to say, huh, this guy knows his shit.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a strong difference between somebody that actually is curious and somebody that's asking questions just to impress you. And I think yeah. a lot of wrestlers have been around long enough, including myself, to be able to find the genuine artifact. And I think Rui is a genuine artifact. He actually cares. And you know, that's why we become so good friends.
Yeah, he does. I mean, I'm almost 50 years old, and I've always said that. You know what? When I grew up, I want to be Roy because yeah. he is just the it's unbelievable the stuff he unearths and finds. And to think then about, man, the time he has to put into to finding that and then converting that. And he is an absolute treasure.
And to think, like I said, I mean, I had about 300 wrestling tapes that I sold before I moved out of my parents' house. I don't even think I sold them. I think I just gave them away. And that's just because VHS has become obsolete. Yep. And to think a guy like Roy is still out there taking collections, he flew to California to pick up 800 tapes to bring back, to go through. And, you know, that's something that we need. If anything, he's the kind of guy that needs a job with, you know, somewhere that can pay him to do that, because that kind of work has a value. And until someone's willing to put a price on it, you know, he's kind of just going to just have a hobby when really, you know, he should be rewarded for that, because there's a level there that's impressive.
Yeah. And because if him and others aren't doing that, I mean, what happens to those tapes, right? If they can't find anybody for them, They're just going to throw them away or get rid of them, and it's lost.
And if you think about it, just look at, you know, as a tape trader from the 90s and 2000s,
yeah,
just think about how much stuff is not on YouTube.
Oh, yeah.
You know, think of how much of the stuff you remember seeing, and once that, you know, how many tapes did you pass over on a list because it's always there? Oh, everyone has that tape. I don't need it.
Yep.
And then next thing you know, you're trying to find it on YouTube or Daily Motion, and man, I wanted to see that, you know, Best of Killer Carla Cox. And now now it's not there. So you know, there's guys like Roy. I wish there was more of them. I wish there was more footage to be found. I wish these copyright strikes would stop. I wish somehow you know, when people get mad about that, because it's only I understand it. They don't want other people making their money, but I feel like the long term of them, they're going to make more money when their awareness is higher. And I feel like guys like Roy are doing public service more than anything.
Yeah. Yeah. There's every week, at least once, there's something I'll be like, man, I remember watching or seeing this, you know, I wish I had that. I wish I could see that. And I can't find it. I'm like, I know it happened, but it's like, I wish Roy's, I could see it.
Roy's the best, because I can be talking with somebody in a car in Tokyo, and then something comes up, and I can message Roy and say, hey, do you have this? And he'll say, no, I don't, but I'll find it. And within 30 minutes, he can have someone that has a tape or a copy, and okay, they're going to send it to me. I'll have it online by Tuesday. Yeah. And it's incredible, you know, and he's an asset. And it's crazy to me, because I'm lucky enough to be able to call him a friend and have that going on. I wish more people would have that kind of drive and passion, because I think we'd all benefit from it. And again, I don't mean to sound like I'm gatekeeping, because I love wrestling so much. I wish everyone was obsessed with it the way I am, because it would be helpful for the business. We wouldn't continue to make the same mistakes. And, you know, the state of independent wrestling wouldn't be so bad if people weren't making these stupid mistakes. But, you know, it's hard to, you know, you can bring a horse to the water, you can't make it drink. At the end of the day, people would rather have their interactions online and have discourse about AEW than they would learn about Brazilian wrestling from 1983.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you mentioned, right, if lots of people, once you tell them about, you know, the Trump on the flag, blah, 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 a lot of people, oh, yeah, I remember seeing something about that. But if someone truly wanted to know Sam Adonis as a wrestler, what would you recommend they try to seek out from your career to watch to give a sample of what you are and how you work?
I would say my Champion Carnival 2019 work.
Okay.
I would say that's the best hybrid of most, because like I said, I can do whatever needs to be done. There's some very obscure British wrestling footage on YouTube of me against guys like Robbie Dynamite and James Mason, where you'll see me doing British tech that you didn't know that a 6'4" American ever knew.
Yeah.
Because that's just the stuff we did every day messing around. That, you know, that's the repertoire. There's very few places where I've had the opportunity to say, okay, you want to be impressed? Watch this. I would say All Japan was the best place for that. I was able to be a heel that was kind of silly, that was serious, that could do my wrestling and still get the character work over. Mexico, you know, I'm a very good heel that, you know, can do the high spots that my babyface needs me to do, but I'm never going to be the guy to try to get my stuff in and show off how good I am. So, yeah, I would say 2019 Champion Carnival, particularly matches with Jake Lee and Daichi Hashimoto were very good. And it's funny, because in that 2019, I remember the write-up that the Observer put out before it. It was, oh, my God, Sam Adonis? Why the hell would he be in this? This is so still. And I remember it made me so mad, because it was like, just misinformation saying how bad, oh, what a terrible decision. He works for CMLL. How is he even allowed to be there? This is dumb. And then if you watch it, the same writer 3 weeks later, the surprising dark horse of the tournament is Sam Adonis. Every match has been able, has delivered. He's over with the crowd way more than we expected. And it's just like, well, there we go. That's why, you know, I feel like a journalist has to be accredited for their opinion. Because, you know, there's plenty of people that know, but the guys that people listen to don't.
Yeah. So what's next for Sam Adonis, right? You're having a good run with AAA, but do you have some goals, whether it be immediate or long-term, that you're still hoping to achieve and that you would like to check off that list before it's all done?
I definitely need to take over the United States at some point. You know, I've been talking to the right people in the right places. So hopefully something happens sooner or later. I feel like the indies are completely dead right now. There's nothing going on outside of WWE and, you know, a couple of smaller TV companies. But I don't know. I work too hard and I feel like I care too much for it not to be, you know, pay off on a major level. Yeah. So we'll see. I think I'm riding out AAA just because there's, for me personally, there's nowhere else that pays the way they pay and treats me the way I'm treated there. You know, a lot of times in the USA, if you want to get in with an indie, you have to go and wrestle for free and get your tryout, show them what you can do. And, you know, I don't feel like I should have to do that in certain places. So I will I'll ride this out. And I think I'm a big enough star in Mexico that one day, you know, the demand will be there. Maybe they need a big Mexican wrestling star or somebody that needs to work with, you know, the luchadors under contract. I think I have a lot going for me, and I think my best days are to come. But
yeah,
until then, I will just see what's happening here in AAA, and hopefully the American independent scene gets better.
Yeah, hopefully. So so let's wrap this up. Same, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I think you and I could just talk for hours on wrestling history and approaches and thoughts on it. It's so great talking to you. Like I said, it's hard with what you've achieved. It's hard to say that you're underappreciated, but I do feel you're underappreciated, and it's a weird thing to say because you have had a lot of success, but I don't know. I think you're one of those guys that not enough people are talking about. And they should, and not just, you know, for the Trump flag waving stuff, but just overall. And
I think, like I said, it comes down to the lack of exposure. I think, you know, again, I've always been at the right place at the wrong time. You know, even CMLL, you know, when I was there for 2 years, they did not have this American buzz that they have right now. Yeah, you know, there's certain places and whatnot. I think, you know, it's a lot of opportunity and being at the right place at the right time. And I'm sure, you know, again, you never quite know. The one thing is staying consistent is all that matters. And, you know, something will happen someday. And all of a sudden, you know, whether it's a year from now or 5 years from now, I'll be the guy that everyone's going to claim they've supported for the last 20 years. You'll know, you'll know that's bullshit.
Yeah, well, you know, they won't know. I'm on record now for saying it.
So exactly.
There no one go. Can claim that. Yeah. So
I remember each one of them. So don't worry.
There you go. So what's the best way for fans, if they want to follow you on social media, keep track of you, what you're up to?
It would be Real Sam Adonis on Instagram and Twitter. My Twitter is a lot of classic wrestling talk and just theory and whatnot, a lot of clips. My Instagram has a lot more of my own personal goings on, my upcoming events and my press and things I do as my career. Twitter is much more about you know, wrestling community and trying to share knowledge and spread knowledge and just enjoy wrestling with the people that, you know, kind of see it the way I do.
I cannot recommend you enough on Twitter. You're a great follow, and I love seeing all those people on Twitter that we like, oh, Sam Adonis knows more than I thought. Because I see those, it seems like, you know, once or twice a week, someone pops up and it's like, whoa, Sam's really kind of knows this shit.
exactly. One of these days, everyone will catch up. So hopefully,
I guess so.
Hopefully it's before I retire, you know?
that would be nice. So again, Sam, thank you for your time and talking to you. Like I said, maybe we'll revisit and talk again in the future. Because like I said, I think you and I I think we could talk for hours. And just on history, not even related to Sam Adonis' career. So
exactly.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here, curator of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, inviting you guys to listen to many of the programs here as part of the WrestleCopia brand, including, but not limited to, the Wrestling Memory Grenade, currently covering the 1988 and the WWF project. You can also listen to the Regional Wrestling Podcast, where we talk the territories, whether it's Jamie Ward with Georgia 81, Roman Gomez with the UWF in 1986, or Gene Jackson covering Memphis in 85. Three projects going on right now over there at Regional Wrestling. You can also listen to the Wrestling Stoop with the legend himself, Bob Roop. Bob goes back in time each and every week, covering not just his career, but countless stories and interactions with hundreds of wrestling names spanning his two decades in the business. But that's not all. You can also check out the Puro Wrestling Academy with the professor of Puro Resu, Mr. Dan Ginnity. Dan and I go back in time and cover the history of Japanese professional wrestling in the English language. And you can listen to all of those shows and more, all part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network, located over at WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com, and anywhere your podcast streaming needs are met, from Apple to Spotify, Pocket Cast, and beyond. And while you're at it, why not subscribe to our social media guides for all the latest goings on here at the WrestleCopia Podcast Network? Plus, I'm constantly adding old school video clips and pictures from throughout wrestling history. You can follow us over on X, formerly Twitter, at Wrestling Grenade. That's at R-A-S-S-L-I-N Grenade. Also, follow and like me, Facebook.com/Wrestling Grenade. And why not subscribe to YouTube.com/Wrestling Grenade? So if you're looking to support that next up-and-coming podcast brand, please consider making it WrestleCopia.
Hey everybody, Gene Jackson here, inviting you to check out the Retro Wrestling Review, where each week I'm joined by some great co-hosts who help me review classic episodes of USWA Championship Wrestling, and right now we are doing week-by-week reviews of 1993. But we don't just do reviews. Sometimes we get a chance to interview some of the people who were there and lived it, plus do watch-alongs. It's a lot of fun, so check out new episodes that drop every Wednesday at WrestleCopia.com. And to find links to everything associated to the podcast, you can go to USWAPodcast.com.
Hey, it's Bob Smith, and guess what? The Outdated Wrestling Hour is now part of the WrestleCopia Podcast Network. But hey, no fear, you're still going to hear the unique guests, comedy, music, authors, journalists, funny people. Who knows who's going to end up on the Outdated Wrestling Hour? Remember, it's all new and all old. So check it out in the WrestleCopia Podcast Network and wherever you get your podcasts. Listen if you know what's good for you.
All right, and thank you to Sam for coming on the show and talking to me. Man, what a knowledgeable guy. Such a deep understanding and appreciation for wrestling history. I could talk to him for hours. Guys, go make sure you follow me on social media. Pretty much any platform, just go look up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or The Dave Dynasty, and you will find me there. Go check out all of the WrestleCopia networks of podcasts. The shows are all fun listens that shine a light on wrestling history. You can look them up individually on your favorite podcast platform or go to WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library at ClassicWrestling.net, or you can download the Ultimate Classic Wrestling app on all of your smart devices. Next week is a little bit in flux. I hope to have a special Christmas episode talking about the WWA Christmas shows, but there is a chance then I may just decide just to take the week off for the holiday. So stay tuned. So don't be alarmed if there's no episode next week. Not a big deal. I will just take it 1 week off for Christmas. I'll be right back after that. But there is a chance a special Christmas episode will be dropping. So you'll just have to see what Santa brings you. So thank you to all of you for your listens, your supports, all your follows and interactions. You guys are wonderful. Let's get out of here. Until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.